Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Suntress here. We got a great show for you today. It's a shorty, but it's a good one. Lots of good information. We're talking to Jimmy Palmiotti first. Now, you know Jimmy's been doing excellent work for DC over the last few years. All-Star Western, Batwing, and of course, the wonderful Harley Quinn book that everyone is raving about. But also, Jimmy's been doing a lot of Kickstarter campaigns, and he's got a brand new campaign for a book called Denver. And this is his sixth Kickstarter. And Jimmy has been exceptional with Kickstarter with his partner Justin Gray, and they seem to have come up with the right formula of asking the right amount of money to achieve their Kickstarter goals. So, several years into Kickstarter, what's the secret? Jimmy gives us his point of view on that. We talk about the realities of the books I've just mentioned. All-Star Western has been in the news lately. It isn't canceled despite some of the things you might have heard on the comic blogs, but as Jimmy says, it is on the bubble, so it could use some readership. If you're not reading it, I'm telling you, Jonah Hex in the DC Universe lately has been fantastic, and just consistently one of the best comic westerns in a long time. But as always, a great conversation with Jimmy Palmiotti to start things off on Word Balloon. Then we're going to speak with filmmaker Brett Culp. Brett has a very interesting project, another Kickstarter campaign that was successful, a film called Legends of the Night. Perfect timing for Batman's 75th anniversary. Brett gives us a lot of personal stories of people that were inspired by Batman. There are a lot of personal stories. There are a lot of interesting stories that you wouldn't expect. And it was a very interesting campaign. The film is out. It is being shown at festivals. But also, Brett and I talk about how if you're interested in seeing the film, you can arrange for a screening in your own town. And that's how we wrap things up on today's Word Balloon. It's all brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Great deals are going on, as always, at InStock Trades. For example, you can get DC and Image Comics at 45% off, Fantagraphic books at 38% off, and you can earn an extra 2% in general on your orders if you go right to their website, InStockTrades.com. They've got great books for you this week in particular. Things like Captain America, The Winter Soldier Hardcover Direct Edition, 50% off. It's just $17.49. You can get Invincible, Robert Kirkman's excellent series. Trade paperback volume 19, The War at Home, is 50% off. Just $8.49. There's another Kirkman series, Thief of Thieves, created by Kirkman, executed by some great creators. Sean Martinborough, Nick Spencer, among them. Volume 3 is available now at 50% off. $7.49. You can get Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures at 50% off, just $9.99. Mice Templar from our good friends Mike Oeming and Brian Glass, 45% off, $9.89. You can get Uncanny from Andy Diggle, very cool crime series. Season of Hungry Ghosts, 30% off, just $13.99. Really neat books at great savings at InStockTrades.com. Don't take my word for it. Go yourself, check out the website. All the books are waiting for you at prices you can afford. InStockTrades.com. All right, it's been several months since we've spoken to Jimmy Palmiotti. We had a little talk in New York, and we mentioned that at the beginning of our conversation. But it's always great to have a moment to speak with Jimmy at length, because he's one of the interesting thinkers of comics. You remember back in the late 90s, Jimmy and Joe Quesada were the creative force behind Marvel Knights that reignited the entire Marvel line to the point where they offered not only Joe Q, but Jimmy Palmiotti an editor's job. Joe said yes, Jimmy said no, but continued his creative talents, went across the street to D.C., did amazing work on books like Superboy and Power Girl, Hawkman. We talk a little bit about Hawkman in this conversation. And his current roster of books, really neat kind of under-the-radar books, Batwing, Harley Quinn, and, of course, All-Star Western featuring Jonah Hex. Some of these books are on the bubble, and Jimmy's very candid about that. It's a very interesting conversation, but mostly we're talking about his new Kickstarter for an excellent book called Denver. Jimmy's found the formula with his co-writer Justin Gray on these Kickstarter books. They are really writing books for themselves, and they're adult books, and Denver is certainly one of those. An excellent book that is drawn by Pier Brito, lettered by Bill Tortellini. I had that for dinner the other night. But this is his sixth successful Kickstarter campaign. How does he do it? Because a lot of guys fail at Kickstarter. It's not, you know, a guarantee. But he talks about that. He talks about what his formula is. And also, as he does each Kickstarter, the project seem to evolve. He has a soundtrack for the book that he's prepared for from our friend Hans Carl, and a song by Kerry Johnson. Really interesting stuff. We direct you to the Kickstarter page to check it out. There's still about 2 weeks left in the project. There's still about a week and a half left in the project, and yes, it's met its goal, but as Jimmy says, they could use more money to make more interesting product. So I urge you to support Denver. Check it out. You'll learn more about it and Jimmy's philosophy of Kickstarter and really the comic market in general. Here's Jimmy Palmiotti on Word Balloon. Jimmy Palmiotti, welcome back to Word Balloon. Man, last time we spoke was New York Comic Con. I got you and Justin to talk about your Jet City Comics book, as I recall.
Yeah, yep. We're on the last issue of that.
Cool.
Right now it's 6 issues, and I think its release date is in June. I think it's been pushed to June.
Okay.
But it's pretty amazing. Jimmy Broxton is killing it on the book.
I'm not surprised. You know, I'm a big Jimmy Broxton fan from his work on Knight and Squire back in the day.
Yeah, and he's done nothing but he's gotten better. His style reminds me now of a really good like Mazzucchelli like style. You know,
interesting.
He's taken on. Yeah.
Wow, that is different from Knight and Squire. So that's very interesting. Cool.
Yeah. He's evolving. You know, we have artists in this business that hit a peak early on and mm-hmm. they stay the same, and then we have others that evolve. And he's one of those guys that his style just keeps getting better. You know, there's not a lot of them in the business.
Well, I appreciate your eye. And I mean, you know, you being a great artist yourself and everything, I mean, you always find interesting partners for your various projects and stuff. I mean, you know, well, it doesn't hurt having Moritad, obviously, on All-Star Western, for God's sake.
No. And you know, it's, well, a lot of times you get lucky, you know. sometimes an artist is I stumble on people a lot, too. You know, I guess because on my days at Marvel Knights, I used to have everybody and their mom showing me their artwork. And at a convention, I don't mind looking at a portfolio. I just always tell a guy, I'm not an editor, and I don't have a big company behind me. But once in a while, I'll see somebody that stands out, and I'll say, you know what? I think we can talk, you know, and try to give. You know, usually I use them for a project or two, and then they get regular work after that, you know. Which is good. I'm very happy to help somebody get their foot in the door.
Well, and, you know, primarily we want to talk to you today about Denver, your current Kickstarter. And you guys seem to have Kickstarter down to a science. That's what it looks like from the outside.
Like any good science, it's a lot of experimenting.
Trial and error, absolutely.
You know, the first one I tried by myself, which was the Queen Crab way back a couple of years ago, and I learned, you know, that hardcovers are very expensive. Shipping is different to every country, and you learn how to pack things. You learn by how many packages you get back ripped in half or exploded, and then you eventually learn that Kickstarter is about customer service. So if anybody has problems, you have to follow up with them, and you know, eventually you learn by I think this is our sixth one. You learn that you have to pack things in terrific material, and you have to kid glove everything, and it's all about communication. And at the end of the day, you know, between me and my buddy Patrick, we pack every single package, you know, ourselves. So although it's kind of like we figured it out, we're also still so grassroots, it's not funny, you know. You know, we still packing each package, and with Denver, it looked like it's going to be over 1,000 packages to send. I don't know. It consumes a large part of my house for like 3 weeks.
That's what I read. I read an article saying that you kind of have like one room as kind of a staging area, almost like a shipping, I'm assuming, kind of station where you're, you know, prepping stuff. And, you know, God, I don't even know. You got a van or something like that? You go to the post office every day, kind of?
No, when it's domestic packages, I do the stamps. We do the stamps from my computer. We figure out the weight, and then I say, okay, well, there's 340 of those, and I pack the car as much as I can. And you know, the local post office and I get along great. So I back the car up, and I took all the guys in my post office to lunch one day. You know,
smart man. Hey, absolutely, they're your delivery service. Yeah.
It's a relationship, right?
Sure.
So they are very patient with me. But anyway, those packages are already stamped. It's when I have to send stuff overseas, I have to fill out a customs form for every single package. And that takes a lot of time. You know, besides packing it, you know, and what I usually do is I'll have an envelope that's a really sturdy envelope, then I'll use backing boards and bags, and I'll put the prints between two boards and tape them up, and then I'll put the book in the bag, and I surround it by two more boards, and I put it in the box, in the envelope. We slap the address on. I usually put a little note or a hey, thanks in there, and then if it's overseas, I have to sit there and we fill out the forms and the weight and it's and whether it, you know, what it is and how many books are inside and what the value is. And then I have to go to post office and sit there for each single package as they type them in.
Sure.
And stamp them. Plus, I have all the do not bend stamps and stuff. Eventually, as I went, I started learning that I should buy these stamps and I should get those stickers. And then these are the envelopes that work for my books. And so I make sure I stock them ahead of time. You know, I'm always buying 500-600 envelopes at a time from companies and just putting them, you know, in the room in my house. It looks like, you know, it looks like box furniture, if you want to look at it like that.
Okay.
Way.
All right.
I kind of wait. It's kind of wait like Denver. And it's like I ordered the boxes, actually. I ordered 8 boxes of 100 envelopes yesterday. And I know they take around a week and a half, and that's fine. I mean, we still have 2 weeks, a little less than 2 weeks on the Kickstarter, so, and then it has to go to the printer. So, but you learn eventually, you learn how to perfect it, and it still takes me a week or two. I'm still drawing the last couple of pledges from Forager because they want the drawings. I offered like a postcard drawing. And so I do like one or two of those a day and, in between writing, but it's a very busy time right now because of Harley, Western, Batwing, you know, and all the other things. And plus I'm doing some screenplay work and it's one of those things where Amanda and I look at each other and say hi and have breakfast in the morning and then we see each other later that day.
Oh, Jesus.
And even though we're in the same house.
Yeah, and Amanda's obviously busy too with her stuff and everything, and with Harley and all that stuff too, right?
Yeah, well, see, you know, we write Harley together and we basically talk about it and then I slam it down on a file and, you know, because I'm a lot quicker with the typewriter. And I break it into pages, and she goes in, and because she's, like, got that really hyper-focused person, she takes a good week to kind of just tweak things and go in. She's not used to writing, so it's new to her, you know?
Okay.
And in between, she has to do covers, and a lot of our books, a lot of the first, thank God, nice things, the Harley 1 and 2 and even 3, they're all getting, like, second printing, so they need more covers from her. And
great.
So she's juggling the cover work and doing that in between. And then, you know, there's life in between, right?
I hope so.
There's everything else.
Yeah, man, I hope
yeah,
so.
Yeah, no, yeah. No, we manage. I mean, like, you know, we're going to hit Mardi Gras next week.
Fantastic. Excellent. Didn't you guys?
Yeah,
and then
we got MegaCon and then Emerald City after that. So it's a lot of cons. So we have to buckle down in between the cons, you know, and as I always explain to convention people, it's not that I don't want to do your con. It's that I'm losing 4 or 5 days of work. So it costs me a lot of money to do a con. So, because I don't really sell stuff at the shows, really. And I said, so it's not that I don't want to do it, and it's not that I need the money. It's that I need the time back, you know?
Sure. Absolutely.
Because I love the cons. I mean, I love meeting people and talking to them. And I'm a big fan of interacting with the fans.
Oh, yeah.
I certainly love to hear opinions and frustrations. I get a lot of frustrations. Why don't they let you guys do this? And I'm like, yes, why don't you call them? Here's Dan Dio's home phone number. Give them a call. So anyway, the Kickstarters, we kind of, you know, those are another time-consuming projects. But I love doing them. It's such so grassroots. I get to communicate with the people that support me and my projects. And the great thing is, we usually finish one, and we get the same people backing the new one, plus new ones. You know, it's word of mouth, right? Everything's
sure.
Word of mouth in this business. Yeah, yeah.
No, I understand. And you know, hey, man, I did Retrovirus, and I did Weapon of God, and I did the digital for both of those.
Right.
But sure. Absolutely. No, man. And no, honestly, Denver sounds great. Let's, I mean, I did want to hear about the mechanics and everything, and I do appreciate that because you know, Kickstarter originally appeared on the scene, and I think we've heard a lot of huge success stories. But what I like is you have seemingly gone through and consistently you've met your goals, but you've always had conservative goals. And, you know, I'm glad that people are coming back and supporting your stuff. I hope that, you know, it is Johnny Appleseed that, you know, not, you know, a few more people each time, or, you know, we'll keep interest and, you know, stick around for the next books and stuff like that. It sounds like that. But yeah, it has been. And I know, too, and I've read in some articles in terms of you talking about Denver recently and stuff, you know, you're still pretty much breaking even. Is that a fair assessment? I mean, I don't even know.
Yeah, we're not really. I mean, you know, I always talk to Justin and Amanda, and, you know, as a group, we always talk about what is our ultimate goal? You know, what do we really want? And once you get past the $10 billion and all that kind of stuff, you know, the fantasizing stuff, right? The reality is that we just want to be able to tell the stories and do some fun books. And we want to tell our stories, the stuff that we create, and we want to own the rights to it. I don't want to give everything away. We do give a lot away every month, but, you know, and when Kickstarter came around, we were like, this is an opportunity to kind of be able to put out some books, you know, our own stuff. And the goals I reach, honestly, when we put the amount down, it pretty much covers everything. So it's covering not only the printing, although, you know, when a Kickstarter goes, it's funny because when you hit the amount and go above, everyone thinks, well, hey, man, that's pure profit. And I always laugh. I'm like, no, you don't understand. That's 300 more books I have to print. You know,
right.
I have to kind of 300 more packages I got to ship. I always laugh when people go, yeah, but look, you made $6,000. That means you got $6,000 in your pocket. And I'm like, that's not how it translates. But what I do is I figure out what the book costs, you know, printing wise, production wise, pencils, inks, coloring,
sure,
design, lettering. We never pay ourselves. For Denver, we had some extra money spent because we did a soundtrack, and so the number you see there covers everybody, and when we hit it, I'm able to give my artist a bonus because I pay him the least amount I can get away with, where he's happy and I'm happy, and then when we hit the goal, I'm able to give him the rate he deserves.
Cool.
So we always do that. There's always a bonus check to my guys. You know, and it's not about profit. If it was about profit, I would be doing something else. This is not, never really been about profit. It's been about any money we have been making on the Kickstarters have gone into paying for the next book.
Okay.
And so on. Look, I am not one of the creators that puts out anything through Image and it sells a ton. I'm the guy that puts the stuff out through Image and it breaks even, you know, or below. You know, Creator Own Heroes is a project that just, I lost a ton of money on.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask about that in contrasting what you're doing with Kickstarter. Please, go on.
Yeah, well, with Creator on Heroes, you know, I laid out all this money for everybody, and I can't, honestly, I can't hire people. But the thing is, you know, I may or may not pay you, because most of these guys, they have families and responsibilities, and I just feel, well, it's my responsibility to make sure at least they're paid. And so with Creator on Heroes, you know, everyone got paid. But I wound up in the hole. I wound up in a pretty big hole with that book. And it just didn't sell. I'm going to do a trade book eventually.
Okay.
Collection, you know, and hopefully we make a couple of dollars there. But I would love to break even somewhere down the line in the next couple of years on that. And it may take years to get there.
Wow.
But when I do the Kickstart, I understand that this is the amount I need to hit. If I hit this, I broke even. And I worked that amount up into the price, and, you know, we hit it. So far, out of the six Kickstarters, we've hit every number we put down. And we're not asking for a ton, but we're not asking for $30 either.
Right.
But you got to remember, Kickstarter is a store. So we're also offering products. So, sure, you can get the digital for $5, and now with the stretch goal, everybody gets the script, and eventually they'll get some other stuff. But the idea is that when you look at Kickstarter, it's a store. You're going there and you're saying, I want that set of prints, or I want that Amanda Connor cover that there's only 200 of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So people will buy that kind of stuff. And that's what we learned, that they do want to support you, but they also want their stuff. and that's a big part of it. And it's a lot, it's easier for me than doing an image book. I love image, and don't get me wrong, I'll always do image books, but I did lose my shirt on Creator on Heroes, and then even like Painkiller Jane through Icon, hopefully I'll break even.
Wow.
Because it just, these things cost money to put together. People forget how much money a comic costs. Hey, if you're paying $100 a day for Disneyland, think about how much a 20-page comic, fully penciled, inked, and colored, and lettered, costs. Even if you go on the cheap end, it's $200 at least.
$200 minimum of production cost for each.
Minimal.
Okay.
Yeah, per page.
Per page.
Minimal. That's cheap. That's cheap. That's not what I pay, you know, my guys. I mean, you're talking about the smaller companies.
I understand. No, you know, Jimmy, I honestly appreciate those kind of hard numbers because I do think a lot of aspiring creators and young creators are listening and need to hear that to understand what the parameters of the game is in terms of trying to make comics. And, you know, honestly, I appreciate the candidness about creator-owned comics as well because I know where your heart was on that and all your friends and stuff. And, I mean, you had Niles, you had Darwin Cook, you had all these guys, you know, and women that were really good creators making really interesting stuff. And like you said, I mean, it is a crowded market out there, so it is tough to be heard and have your product noticed, you know, in this field of great comics. I mean, it seems like, and you're a better observer of this than I am because you're in the game, but it seems like every 10 or 12 years, we're at another point of, God damn, there are so many great comics on the shelves right now, not just from the big two, but the competition you have within Image and the other, you know, IDW's Dark Horse and the like and everything, all cranking out good books. So, and everybody asking for $4. It's kind of tough out there.
Yeah, it's $4 is expensive. I mean, I learned on Creator on Heroes, I learned that it should have been a $4 book instead of a $3 book.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, at the last issue, I mean, we put, I think there was like 48 or 50 pages worth of material in there.
Yeah, wow.
And I was still keeping it cheap. And I was just like, you know, I learned the hard way. I thought if we kept it cheap and we offered enough variety, people would want it. What happened was the retailers didn't care. The retailers didn't order it. I had one-third of the retailers order the book. Two-thirds of the retailers out there never ordered an issue.
Interesting.
So it didn't matter what the names were. It just wasn't stuff they thought they could sell. And it's easier to sell Marvel and DC and Image than it is to sell other stuff and certain Image titles, you know, but not
sure,
all.
Sure.
And you got to remember, you read the Image, you say, this one's a hit and that one's a hit. But the reality is you look at the numbers, it's 10,000, it's 12,000. It's not a hit. You know, it's not a hit. The team's not making a fortune on the book. You know, they're making their money back and probably a couple of bucks, but nobody's quitting their job.
Exactly.
Over it. It's when you have a success like Walking Dead or, you know, one of the bigger books, I get it. Or you like Matt Fraction, you can come in and do, you know, a couple of books. These are the books that do well, but for the most part, most comics average between 3,000 and 10,000 copies. You look at the list of the top 100, the top 300, you're going to see 200 of them are around under 10,000.
Understood.
So, you know, so, I mean, that's the reality. Now, the great thing is if you're a writer that can draw and can do his own lettering and coloring, well, shit, you know, you can put out your own book and that's your overhead. But unfortunately, I'm not, I don't really like my own drawing. And I just don't have enough time of the day to eat half the time. Again, everything's different, but these are the facts. And I learned from Creator on Heroes. I learned from the Kickstarters. I learned from books like Harlequin. I learned that there's room for that kind of material where I never thought Harley was going to be a big hit.
Really?
You know? Yeah. Well, how would I know that? I mean, it had a Harley series before and it eventually got canceled.
Sure.
And although people love her, I don't know, you know, how is this book going to do? I mean, the approach on the book for us was, well, we're just going to do whatever we want and have fun with it. And Dan in D.C. said, go crazy. And it worked out. You just don't know how things are going to do. It's always a guess. It's always guesswork.
All right. Well, you know, I am glad that, you know, Harley is finding its audience. And more importantly, too, that you're getting to do your own thing because it just seems like, and again, as an outsider, that there are very regimented books at D.C., And it seems like All-Star Western and Harley are kind of exceptions. You know, and we'll get into, you know, Jonah's adventures because, man, I'm telling you, you've been sure. That's been fantastic. I've just every issue, and I'm so glad that it hasn't ended. I keep waiting, like, all right, I bet the windup's coming. I'm sure in two issues it'll be done, and it isn't. And I love Hex in the 21st century. I think it's just fantastic, and just how he is with his own, you know, own wits.
I think the new one comes out tomorrow, right? 28.
Probably. That makes sense, man. All right, what can you tell us if we preview?
Sure. 28 is the 100th issue Justin and I have written together.
Fantastic, man. Oh, that's great. Wow.
And it's the issue where, now I got to get it in front of me because I'm my brain is going to skip ahead because I'm writing.
Understood.
34 right now.
Oh,
so.
Wow. Okay, cool. Oh, man.
Yeah, let me, hang on a second.
Sure,
let me
man. Yeah,
it.
All right.
There it is.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. This is the issue where the issue before Jonah gets in a very bad accident, and this issue opens up with Jonah in the hospital. And if you look at the Darwin Cook cover, you see his scar is not there anymore.
Awesome.
Okay. I will also say that Booster Gold is in this issue.
About time. All right. Very cool. And no,
okay.
No pun intended. About time. Yeah. Very nice.
And we're going to make a lot of people who've been complaining about Jonah Hex not being in the West very happy in this issue.
All right, fair enough.
But the problem is with Jonah, I'll tell you, is somehow we lost the audience.
Really?
Along the way. The book's at one of the lowest numbers it's ever been at.
Oh.
You know, we don't know personally what to do because we're writing the craziest, wildest comic we can.
I hear you, man. I love it. Go on.
You know? So we don't know what to do. And it's hard to just take somebody and say, here, buy this, because they see All-Star Western. Oh, I don't want to buy Western. I don't like Jonah Hex. But I don't like that. You know, preconceived, whatever. So right now, it's we're in the zone, man. You know, we're in the... We kind of, you know, unless numbers take a turn, we kind of know the sun is setting in the West.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
You know, so we're doing what we can to keep it alive, and we have 34. We have a guest artist that's done the book twice. I'm not going to say who it is. Don't even get it out of me.
All right.
But he's done the other series twice.
All right.
I'm just going to say 34 is a big issue.
Cool.
But you know, it's one of those things that people, you know, it just, we lost the audience. 52 started, and everybody liked it with Amadeus Arkham and all this kind of stuff going on. But every issue, we kept losing another 1,000 people, another 1,000 people. And eventually, you know what happens. You lose, all of a sudden, you lost 8,000 people. And
wow.
The numbers are at its lowest, so
man,
we're just doing what we can. You know, I think it's just, you know, has it run its course? I have no idea because I love Jonah, but we'll see what happens. We'll see. We'll know in another month or two where we're going.
Man,
you know?
I hope you are able to get to 34 and beyond. And all I can say is, man, I've been one of these consistent readers, and truly, man, when it was Jonah Hex and when it became All-Star Western, I think you did short form well. I think you've been doing long form well, and like I said, I love the craziness of Jonah Hex in the modern world. And I knew eventually it would end. But regardless, it's just been man. I mean, it's great, and I appreciate his point of view and his assessment of the 52, and also, you know, his conversations, whether it's been with Bruce Wayne or it's been with Superman and the like, and his girlfriend is awesome. And when he went to Wicker Man and everything, crazy shit, man. No, it's honestly, I look forward to every issue.
Our job is to keep you from never feeling like, oh, I've seen this before. I don't want to read this. I know where this is going. I don't have to read this. I know where this is going. I have that with a lot of superhero books. So when I'm writing something, I really hyper-focus on the fact that we should be throwing something at you every issue that you never saw coming and going crazy with it. And that's what we've been we've been trying to focus the book for the past year on it. And, you know, the sales don't really change our story, right? It just, you
good.
Know,
good.
The sales just hurt us in the long run, but our story stays the same. We stay true to Jonah and we stay true to the madness of the book, you know?
Cool, man. Well, you know, you did that with Power Girl. You did that with Hawkman back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, clear examples that I can think of where you didn't know where things were going. And you know, in some cases, things, especially in Hawkman, man, things got very dark and very weird for a little while and stuff. And I thought that was great when you made Golden Eagle kind of a perv and kind of moving in on Hawkman and stuff. I love that.
Hawkman was like the crime of the century for us because they bounced us off Hawkman when it was selling better than it ever has.
Wow.
To make room for two season pros, and then the book got canceled because the sales just died.
Yeah, and all of a sudden we got Hawkgirl, and you're right, man. And honestly, I love Walter and I love Howard, and was excited to see the difference. But you're right, there was nothing wrong with what you guys were doing, and you were keeping things moving. So yeah, that's editorial. Yeah, exactly, man. It happens. Yeah,
it happens.
Yish.
So, we're like, you know, when you're not the top writers, you get a lot of leeway to be a little insane.
Awesome.
You know? And we're definitely not top writers, but we definitely, you know, go under the radar with a lot of the stuff we do because they're just not looking as hard.
Who's your editor for both books? Actually, all three, because Batwing. Tell me all three. Who are your editors?
Well, you know, it's funny because we can look at the history of Jonah Hex and there's like 30 editors.
Really?
You know? Steve Wacker was the one we started with. Steve was great. It just kept changing as they go. Right now on Jonah, let's see, because it changed from issue 27 to 28. So right now it's Harvey Richards.
Okay.
Is the editor on that and Harvey we worked with before on some of the Freedom Fighters stuff.
Okay,
you know?
Sure.
Yeah, so we're familiar, you know, we're very familiar with Harvey. And then on Batwing, it's Rachel Gluckstern is the editor on that. And then on Harley, it's Katie Kubert.
Okay.
So we keep those three.
Okay.
We keep those three jumping on their toes. they're all good. They're all good editors. They just, I'm a little difficult. As far as I think I'm difficult sometimes for some of the editors. You know.
Because I'm
a little bit of a perfectionist.
Good for you. Well, you want your books your best and everything, man, and. You know, I don't know. I defer to you because of your experience in the business, but there are a lot of young editors out there right now, and I don't mean that in any disparaging way, but
right.
I can appreciate a lot of frustration from writers and artists that are getting notes from guys that these are the first books that they've ever overseen. And, I remember the bullshit that, you know, Jenkins was getting about Batman never sitting down. And I'm really kind of glad that came out because that and I heard that laugh and I appreciate that because it's – I mean, that's the thing, man. I mean, that's – come on. I mean, that's the kind of idiocy that you're like, what the hell is going on? So I'm glad you're being able to tell your story still. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Feel free if you want to chime in. A lot of times
they give me editors to break in.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
You know, because Dan knows that I have a pretty strong editorial kind of like a feel for things, you know, like and also because I work with the artist and I work with everybody. You know, I have to see the lettering. I have to see the coloring before it leaves the door. You know, it's like everything has to be, you know, perfect in my head. Now, that's a pain in the ass when guys are trying to get the book out the door. But I always use the argument that. You know, it has my name on it and, you know, it survives for a long time. So I don't want it to be crap, you know?
Sure.
And that's a part of being a perfectionist. It's also the part of why Kickstarter is so much fun because pretty much it falls on me and Justin and the crew if it sucks, you know? And if something's wrong, and believe me, we had in Clean Crab, we had like three, lettering, stuff with lettering happened, and, you know, I lost sleep.
Okay. Yeah.
For a day.
Sure.
Because something was spelled wrong, or it was the wrong word, and, you know, and then, you know, the worst thing is you get a review and they point it out to you. They love to point it out. But with the Kickstarters, it's our problem. It's our machine, it falls on us. And that said, we also get to pick the paper stock and the way it's printed, and we get to deliver the digital things, and we get to add extras. And mm-hmm. I get, you know, with a stretch goal, we just had a stretch goal where we just hit, now I can put a sketchbook in the back. So I just talked to the printer because I have to have another 8 sheets of, you know, I have to have 8 pages more.
Right, right.
For the sketchbook. So then it changes the weight of the book and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But we control that now. Now it's cool. You know, it's like there's things we can do. We even have a stretch goal coming where Pierre Brito, who's the artist.
Yes, I wanted to talk about him. Go on.
15. Yeah, he did 15 beautiful pencil sketches. And we just, if we hit that stretch goal, we're going to put that and some other stuff randomly in people's packages. So
Wow. You're
not going to know it's you until you open a package, but we also think that's kind of fun.
No, I really like how you've evolved, and not only, you know, doing that kind of stuff with the art, but, you know, getting Hans Karl in to do the soundtrack, I think is fantastic. I'm a fan of Hans's. We follow each other on Twitter, and I've enjoyed his music. And as you point out in the Kickstarter campaign, experienced guy in movie soundtracks and animation and other things. And I mean, it's so cool that these composers are able to really give this full orchestra sound with the way that synthesizers and the other instruments they use are, you know, capable of really providing that kind of full-blown John Williams orchestra feel, or whatever feel the composer wants to come up with. And people can see, if they go to the Kickstarter page and watch the trailer, or on YouTube as well, and hear the music and stuff like that, that's great, man. And it really does open up. And it becomes what you guys call yourselves, paper films. I really think this is a much more three-dimensional experience, having the audio along with what we're reading and looking at as far as the art.
Yeah, I always mention that, you know, when I write, I listen to soundtracks. So it's funny because I was listening just before you called to The Lion in Winter, which is John Barry.
I'm a big fan, sir.
The old movie, I don't know if you remember the movie,
Peter O'Toole, Catherine
Hepburn. Peter O'Toole,
yep. Young Anthony Hopkins.
John Barry from, you know, people know him from James Bond and Dance with Wolves and stuff. But I've always been a fan of soundtracks, and I always put on a soundtrack that fits what I'm writing. It kind of inspires me. It's funny because I was just writing a scene from a book, and it was like a really sad scene, you know? And I put on some Beethoven while I was playing, and I'm writing the scene where the character, they hit a deer on the side of the road. And it just, the music fit it. And what it did is, instead of me writing, they hit the deer and the deer's on the car, it made me, like, I was in that moment, and I started breaking up my panels a little more. So the person that hit the deer gets out of the car and touches the deer's face because the deer's dying. And touches his face and then tries to pull the deer out of the window. And it made me think, instead of just having the deer in the car and then they take the deer off the car, it made me stop a little bit and slow down the moment, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. and this is what, it's very cinematic, right? And comics are cinematic.
Absolutely.
But it makes you, you know, instead of 4 pages on the panel, I think I went to 8 panels just to show what's going on. This is not something that's a throwaway. This is a life being lost, and it's a sad moment. And, you know, I had the music playing, and I'm just like, yeah, you know, it's that experience, you know, and you feel it, you know, when you're writing it, you feel it, and you see the scene in your head, the music adds to it, you know, and then I imagine sometimes you imagine what they would say, or you say, there's no dialogue here. There's no reason, there's no need for words. That's the beauty of comics.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a gesture, it's a movement, the camera's focused on something. And you know, with comics, the difference with comics and films, with comics, you know, as when you're reading it, you can stop yourself and look at a panel for a couple of minutes and go back and look at the page and absorb it. You know, film dictates the speed.
Right, you have no choice.
But a comic, yeah, and you read a comic at your own speed. You know, you really own it. But having the soundtrack on Denver was just something Like yourself, Hans and I have been talking online on Twitter, and I've met him a couple of times in the Long Beach Comic Con. He always comes over, and we talk about what soundtracks we like. And, you know, I thought when I was thinking about the soundtrack, I was talking to Justin, I said, you know, I know this guy, Hans, he's really good. I said, I wonder if he'd be up to this. It's a little crazy, and we can only pay him so much, but, and he just was all in. Yeah, he was all over it. And I started dumping all these soundtracks on him. I'm like, listen to this guy now. I like the speed of this, but I don't, you know. And, you know, since Denver takes place, and it's the last city left in the United States. The United States is underwater, and they build a city on top of Denver. And it has this, you know, I wanted the soundtrack to have this, like, sort of, like, echoey kind of winter. Because it snows a lot in the book, and if you know it's snow, when you go out, the sound is buffered a little bit in the snow.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to have that feeling of big, empty spaces. And you look at the buffering of snow and the sound in snow, and then you have ocean surrounded by ocean. And ocean, you know, when it's subdued, when weather's really subdued, it sound travels weirdly, you know. And I was trying to explain to Hans, and I'm like going, so, you know, I'm looking for this kind of sound. And I probably drove him a little crazy, but he grabbed right onto it. And, you know, and we both started throwing references to, like, Vangelis and Blade Runner and then, you know, this soundtrack and Inception soundtrack. And I would go back to, you know, remember in Die Hard when it sounds like a guy's hitting an anvil with a hammer?
Yeah.
Right, when everything was going bad with Bruce Willis, you hear that ding, ding, you know.
Yep.
And so with the Denver Kickstarter, we get a soundtrack. Everybody, you know, eventually I think everybody's going to get it, because if we hit the stretch goal that I'm going to put on here, I'm going to try to get everybody to get it. And just something to listen to while you read the book or not. You know, don't read the book, listen to the music, you know. But we wanted to make something different with this Kickstarter. We thought music would be cool, and we're always trying to do something. Yeah, I'm trying to experiment all the time. It's probably why I fail so much, but I fail gracefully, and I move on to my next thing. I'm very proud of all my failures, which sounds like a weird thing to say, but I'm very proud of them all.
Well, no, you're a smart guy, man. You learn from failure, and you experiment, and you're willing to stretch and push yourself into interesting directions. That's what artists do. That's what successful or interesting artists do. And I think, again, you're finding that right formula that's allowing you to continue to do these things. No, man, keep it up. Keep. Well, I don't want you to fail, but by all means, keep stretching.
No. Well, we're learning. You know what? The thing that's actually helping us lately is that we actually, you know, we put the paperfilms.com website together, and being able to offer the digital downloads of the books, even if they're $3 or $5, that money has really helped us.
Fantastic.
With a lot of stuff, and I think the fans liked it, because, you know, if they pay, you know, $2 or $3 for a book, they actually know it goes to us.
Absolutely.
Instead of Apple, or instead of, you know, another company, because we have a lot of middle companies, you know, handling the digital books, Amazon and stuff, and nothing against them, they're all trying to make a living. But I think with the paper film site, I think we find a lot of people go to it and they buy like 6 things. You know, they're
That's
not just
excellent.
Trying one book. They're actually picking up 6 different books, so they're buying an actual copy. And that helps a lot, because that money, like I said, that money all goes into the pot for the next project. You know,
I'm really,
I don't have to live large. So
I'm really glad you said that, because, no, I think people do need to know that. And especially, I do think, again, that creators that enter the digital realm have to know that you have to offer your product by yourself. I mean, hey, man. Even the stuff I do, you know, people buy the Word Balloon app. Well, I charge $3,
sure.
And a buck goes to iTunes, and a buck goes to the people who design my app, and I get a buck and everything. So, no, I understand that. And again, I'm really glad you said that, because, yeah, people should know to go to paperfilms.com and buy the stuff there, so that the money.
And they
really
should get your app.
Oh, God bless
you. I know they're probably listening to it right now. But they should turn somebody else on to it.
There you go. Exactly. Tell a friend. And by all means, tell a friend about paperfilms.com as well. No, this
exactly.
is cool. And no, I like the concept behind Denver, this post-apocalyptic world. It kind of reminds me of Soylent Green, because you got the haves and the have-nots.
kind of.
Yeah, and I love Soylent Green. I kind of figured. I love that movie. That movie, you know, the first 20 minutes of that movie, Edward G. Robinson is holding a tomato.
Yeah.
And saying, that's a real tomato. He goes, you know, all those years ago, they warned us about global warming. And that movie was made in 71, I think.
Yeah, or 71 or 73, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they're talking about global warming. How crazy.
Yep.
And overpopulation. And the movie really is, you know, forget about the big punchline part of it.
But right.
The movie really is, and it is has the most bizarre, by the way, the most bizarre thing with women in it, that their furniture. That's, you just have to watch it to believe it.
Yeah.
But I love that. It's sort of like that, except in the world of Denver, the city is very well run, and everyone's great, and everyone's getting food. There's a little undercurrent of some people, and when you read the book, that has some problems. But for the most part, it's functioning because it's keeping people out, and it's not letting in the riffraff. And the story basically is about a Border Patrol guy, you know, Max Flynn, who actually, because of something that happens to him, he has to actually let in some of the riffraff. And he has a personal family member at stake that if he doesn't, they're going to be in trouble. And so he's doing it for the right reason, and all the wrong things are happening. So like I liked my entertainment, I liked the guy cornered that has nowhere to go, and we watch him react. And that's what it does. And you know, Denver's last 10 or 15 pages are crazy.
Cool.
But they have to be, because the setup is pretty tight as far as what happens to Max. And yeah, it's an interesting story, because, you know, at one point I would say it's like Die Hard on a post-apocalyptic city, except Max does something that most heroes in movies don't do, is he starts going outside for help. And so it's a little different than a lot of stuff you read. At the same time, it has a familiar note to it that I think we need that in some level. It definitely has an act three, you know, where the shit hits the fan.
Okay.
Kind of stuff. But because it's a mature audience book, and because nobody's telling us what we can and can't do, there's nudity in it and excessive violence.
Yay.
And I always warn people, it's not for the kiddies.
That's fine.
Forager was for the kids. Denver's not for the kids, you know?
Jim, the comic books are books. They're not a genre. And when people get angry that there aren't more comic books for kids, or that all comic books aren't tailored for kids, it's like, no, you're doing it wrong, man. It's a book. There are children's books and there are adult books. I got no problem with that. Go on.
Exactly. I mean, it's funny. I had that last Painkiller Jane theory they did with Icon.
Mm-hmm.
I had her boob out in a couple of books, and the crap people tell me, you know, oh, that's just excessive, and, you know, you can see a breast. Why isn't that even there? And I said, well, I hate to tell you, but I like to look at women's breasts. So there is that. And actually, our next Kickstarter after Denver, and we're way into it right now, we're trying to stop the first one, is we're going to do Sex and Violence Part 2.
Yeah, I'm hip. I've been reading your tweets about that. Go on.
Yeah, so and it has three stories in it, and
oh, okay.
They couldn't be any different from each other, and you know, we're just like, all right, we did this on the first one, and we're gonna try to do another one and see if there's an audience for it, you know, and it's just, I don't want to talk about it too much, except that, you know, we have to pay the final bills on it soon, and I have like a separate account it's for all my books. So I just need, as I raise a little money, I could pay for another three or four pages of the artists we have working on them.
Okay.
But we're getting there.
Okay, man, you're like,
it's going to be fun.
You're like Orson Welles was in like the 70s and before he passed away in the 80s and stuff, you know, doing the other books to pay for the passion projects and stuff like that. I'm hip. I get it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if I wanted to be rich, I would have stayed in advertising.
Understood.
If I wanted to make just money in comics, I would have kept to inking.
Okay.
When I switched over to writing and started doing stuff with Joe at Event, and started writing stuff like 21 Down and mm-hmm. Resistance and, you know, all that stuff, I realized that that's what I really want to do, is new stuff, but there's a price to pay for that. You know, because it's easy to write a Batman book and then be a hot writer, in a way, because you're on a hot book. And or X-Men. If you write an X-Men book, you're the X-Men writer, right? So all of a sudden, you're the X-Men writer. It's a lot more difficult to do your own thing. That's why I admire guys like Kirkman, you know?
Sure.
With Walking Dead. He did his own thing on a whole bunch of books. That thing hit like a monster. And honestly, he can sit back and relax all he wants now, but he doesn't. He's out there putting out new books, and I kind of admire that, you know?
Absolutely, man. Well, and I'm hoping that, yeah, you know, eventually, like Bendis or Fraction or Kirkman or Remender or some of these other guys that have struck well with, you know, a mainstream book, that some, you know, Palmiotti DC or Marvel project really does explode. And then, man, I'd like to read more. What else do you and Justin have? And then you got the back catalog of all this Kickstarter stuff. And, you know, God damn it, what was the Black Bull book that you guys did with Phil Noto?
Gatecrasher and Beautiful Killer.
Beautiful
and New West.
Yeah, and East of West is the one I was thinking of. Yes, and Beautiful Killer.
Yeah, absolutely. New West.
Or New West. Yeah. I'm sorry, yeah. Bud. Yeah.
Yeah, that's at That's actually at Regency Films. I don't know what they're doing with it, but you know, they're supposed to be developing it. I have a lot of stuff like that that's out there in developing or being sold or being shuffled around.
Are you getting checks? Are you at least getting paid while they're in development hell?
I did get a check of like $300 a week for.
All right. Yeah, all right.
I actually got a royalty check on a Painkiller Jane episode I wrote for Sci-Fi. I got like a couple $100.
All right.
Very happy to get that.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Yeah. Crazy.
It's nickel and dimes, but boy, they add up.
I hope
so. You gotta be smart. You know, I'm in for the long race. I'm not sprinting. I'm actually planning to be around, hopefully, knocking on wood, as we talk, for a while. And it's a big race. And I just want to see the characters. You know, I just want to see people keep enjoying what we're doing, and that's my bottom line. You know,
I understand, man. No, I have the same discussions about my own career and podcasting and broadcasting and stuff like that. It's a marathon, man. No. And
yeah,
that's what you got to do. And I think that's who wins eventually, too, is the people that don't give up. And it's like, no, you know, I'm patient. Everything's fine. And, you know, luck is when opportunity and preparation meet. And I'm a firm believer in that. And it sounds like you are as well. So keep it up, man. No, you're doing good, man. The stories are great. The question, like I said, it's a crowded market and it's tough to get people to hear you when you're ringing the bell.
No, I know. I mean, you know, honestly, I, you know, we all do this. We question our own talent. You know, I worry about everything because I always think it could be better and I could be better. And what aren't I, or why is that guy so great to me? You know, and I constantly, you know, and it's funny because when you're a creator, and just so the people listening that are creative understand this, even when you get a good review, you're like, yeah, that guy's drunk. You know, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. That book's not that good. You know, but you're happy. You're happy someone enjoyed it that much. Or when they give you a horrible review, you're almost like, oh, they caught me.
Interesting.
They found me out.
Interesting.
You know,
yeah,
they figured me out. I really do suck. They just, nobody's figured it out yet. But, you know, in the long run, you wind up, you write things for yourself. So I write the kind of comics I want to read. So Denver is a book I want to read. I like the futuristic looking stuff. I like cool sci-fi. I like the drama. I like the nudity. I like the violence. That's something I want to see. I want to read it. Therefore, I'm going to write it. Trigger Girl 6 was something I wanted to see. And, you know, and then when I get visuals from Phil Noto, I'm like, okay, I really want to see it now.
You bet. You bet.
But you write the stuff that you like. And that's the goal. The goal is that you'll be able to write everything you like. Because sometimes we do got to take gigs that aren't made for us. And we write them and we realize halfway in, oh, this is not working. And the funny thing is sometimes it works and it does well. And you're sitting there going, I hate this book, but everybody likes it. It's such a weird thing. It's such a weird.
I understand.
Everybody goes through this. They take a job on. They have high hopes. And when the reality stuff kicks in, you're like, oh, well, you know, I could either quit or keep pushing forward. And I always feel like, you know, the reason I have so much work is a lot of people quit around me. So I'm very persistent. But I do think I need, you know, I need to get better. And everybody needs to get better, I guess. And they feel that way. We're all insecure kids inside.
Of course. You know, as you, and I wanted to ask this when we were talking about Hans and the music and stuff. I'm sure you've seen like what Thrill Bent is doing and guys like Riley Brown with his book Power Play and also with the Infinite Comic he's doing in Marvel with Deadpool or the Batman 66 stuff where you've seen this kind of layered panel progression and it's really not panels, but the way that the screen kind of builds as you swipe and stuff. Have you thought about, have you toyed with that at all in terms of trying to compose a book that way as opposed to traditional panel to panel?
I would have to be approached by like somebody like Mayfire or somebody that, and say we want to do this, and then I would write it for that format. I'm mm-hmm. writing for the page format,
sure,
and I'm writing for the straight digital format, but it would have to, because I write video games and I write mm-hmm. animation. I did some Spider-Man cartoon last year and Superhero Squad. And you write for certain things, and it's format. A lot of time it's format. So if I was doing that, I would write it for that format. But it wouldn't make sense for me to write that in my regular books that way, because then you'd have 40 pages of, you know, it would lag, you know.
No,
I write for the format. I haven't done any of that. I wrote, what was that? I did one of those emotion comics for a movie, and it was with, you know, it's amazing. I can't remember this stuff. I did two for Nike. I did LeBron James and Vince Carter. I wrote those. Those were Hoop Town.
Oh, great.
And I wrote those animations. But I also did one for, it's a Jude Law movie where, with Frederick Forrest, the guys that are taking hearts, like they bought a fake artificial heart and they're collecting on them.
I remember the movie, and that was going to be my guess. I don't remember the title, but yeah, when they're harvesting organs and stuff, I totally remember
that
movie.
And I wrote the animated short that goes with it, where Jude Law read my dialogue, which was so much fun.
Oh, that's cool.
And Repo Man.
Right, of course. Shame on us. Yes, of course.
Yeah, and so I've done that, and I had to write that a little differently because it was animated like a film, you know. So I had fade-ins, and I had double images and swipes and all that kind of stuff going on. So it's just, you just write for the format.
Understood.
You're not changing the content; you're just changing the pacing, I think.
Before you go, I don't want to lose a chance to talk a little bit more about Batwing and Harley, and we'll circle back to Denver at the end, but. Yeah, man, I love Luke Fox. I didn't know if I was going to like Luke Fox because I understood the need for the creative change, but I did find the concept of having a Batman in Africa really fascinating. By the same token, I think Luke Fox is a pretty cool character, and I've been enjoying his adventures as well. So if you want to kind of let people know what's coming up.
Sure. Well, with Batwing, you know, that was a book that were given to us that they said they wanted to change. So it's not like we didn't want...
Sure.
To do with Batwing and Africa was DC said we want to make a different character Batwing, and then we pitched Luke Fox to them. And right now I'm trying to think because I write so far ahead. Justin and I are so far ahead on it. He's underground. I think it's he's underground and he's dealing with his sister has gone missing.
Okay.
I'm hoping I'm not ruining a later issue because I don't know what's out. I just know what I'm writing. And
well, we'll keep it general then. And has the response to the character? Yeah.
He has a lot of family issues. He has some daddy issues. And he deals with Batman in the upcoming issues. But what happened is his sister's gone missing.
Okay.
And he has to go to the underworld, you know, with what's going on in Batman and everything. And we kind of mess with him a big time. Luke... we're in the phase right now where we're kind of giving him a really hard time with his family, him and his family and what's going on in his life. So we're taking the character in some crazy spots and honestly, yeah, I don't know what issues in front of people now, but
Got to be 27 or 28, yeah, but, you know.
28, yeah, and,
Well, I just wanted to know, too, like, what, you know, how is the health of that book? You talked about All-Star Western being kind of...
Oh, that's another book that's in the same boat.
Oof, all right.
Yeah, the numbers aren't great. It's hard to find an audience for the book.
Sure.
I hate to say, you know, people always say they want this and they want that, and then when you give it to them, they don't want it. So we got some cool stuff coming up. Batwing is going to be in the bigger books that are coming this year from the Batman title.
Yeah, the Bat Events, yeah.
A big part.
Okay, cool.
He's played a big part in that. So we're hoping to get a boost. But, you know, the numbers on both those books leave something to be desired. Every time I read online, like, why aren't these books canceled? I always sit there and go, uh-oh, you know. And then with Harley... Let's see. I think the Valentine's Day one just came out. And then next issue, Harley Quinn plays... Oh, she gets to be a doctor. And we have a grand... She's talking to one of the grandmas in a senior home. And she complains that her kids, her daughter and her son and daughter-in-law and the kids, the grandchildren, never visit her anymore. And Harley gets pissed. So... He goes after the family that's not visiting the grandmother. And that's in the next issue. And
that's awesome.
That's an insane issue. Yeah, and we have a little bit of roller derby in there. We have I'll just say it's a page or two for if people are real Star Wars fans, they'll understand what we're doing on two pages and laugh out loud.
You know,
I don't want to give it away, but it's two pages that if you're a diehard Star Wars fan, you totally get what we're doing and laugh your brains out. So we have that going on. There's still assassins trying to kill Harley, which we kind of focus on. Issues, I think, 5 and 6, we introduce a character named Cy Borgman.
Okay.
An old Jewish man in his 80s. But his code name is Cyborg. He's half machine. Half,
sure.
Half old Jewish man from Brooklyn. And those two have an adventure tracking down some Russian bad guys.
Oh, cool.
And the book is zany, and it probably is getting a little zanier as it goes.
That's cool.
We're trying, Amanda and I are just laughing and writing it, and we're like, we're just happy that somebody's buying it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I remember all the initial shit you got for, you know, some of the stuff you did in the first couple issues and even before they came out. And it reminded me of almost South Park, where people didn't understand your guy's sense of humor. They had an expectation of what they wanted from a Harley Quinn book. And you guys were taking the character into much more... like, just dark humor. And again, it was all humor-based and stuff. But, you know, there's a weird kind of zeitgeist out there with some female fans. Is that still following you? Or much like the South Park guys, you know, they went their own direction. And I don't hear the complaints about South Park I used to. And South Park goes on its merry way and you know, gets as dark and as shitty as they want to. And if you don't get it, well, you know, too fucking bad, basically.
I think a lot of people, especially with the stuff with the Zero book before it came out, mm-hmm. a lot of people were, well, there was petitions against us, and there were people telling me on Twitter that, you know, this should happen to me and that should happen to me and how dare I, and me and Amanda are horrible people, and how could we do this stuff? And then the book came out, and all that went away.
Attaboy.
What happened, there's still a couple of people out there that didn't like the way we did Poison Ivy in the issue, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like the way she was portrayed, and they were very, very vocal to me about it. And I just say, well, you know, I said, this is the way we see the character, you know? Sorry it doesn't match with yours. But, you know, when people have a favorite character and they have an idea how they want to see it, every time it's not exactly the way they want it, they make a lot of noise about it. And that's the internet, right? The internet's not for happy people. It's for complaining people. So they sit and they wait for the new books and see if there's anything new, I guess, they can get upset at. I don't know. We try to stay true to the characters. Some people don't like it. Most people do.
Awesome.
So you can't really make everybody happy. The first thing you learn in life is you can't make everyone happy.
Indeed.
But if you can make most people happy, that's pretty good.
Attaboy.
No, you know? I don't think the controversy is there. I think they finally found out that the tone we're doing is way over the top and crazy. So, you know, at first we had people, Hollywood never do this, and Hollywood did this, you know, and now they're seeing like, oh, we get it. It's kind of like its own book. It's kind of just having fun.
Yeah.
And that's the key word, fun. Harley should be fun and crazy, and, you know, she has a stuffed beaver that she talks to, and there's, you know, she lives upstairs from a freak show and a wax museum. You know, it's we set up a lot of madness. She's in the roller derby. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on. So does it get crazier? Yes.
Yay.
Do the other DC characters come into the story eventually? Sure, now and again. But don't expect them to be exactly like they're written in the other books.
Right.
It's two different writers.
Yeah, you know? they're in Harley's world. Absolutely, man. No. They're coming in a Harley sandbox. Absolutely. No, that's cool.
Did you ever know somebody that when you go to their house, it's like another world? That's what it's like.
I understand, you know? Man. Not, dude. Yeah. You guys keep it up. You guys are fantastic. And honestly, that's the thing. You guys always are pushing in interesting directions, and you're making books to satisfy yourselves. And I'm glad that you're getting at least a core audience that is allowing you to continue to make these interesting Kickstarter books, and that you've got sympathetic ears like people at DC that are allowing you to do your own thing too, man. Because you are.
They've been great. Well, DC's been great. You know, they really have.
Well, and honestly, man, yeah, during the thick of that shit, they stood by you. And I thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, I mean, like you said, people have to be patient and see it before they can truly judge. But, again, the internet is a prejudging kind of angry place.
Yeah, people really want to be angry at stuff. And I was, like, laughing because they spent a lot of time being angry at me. And then you watch the news and you're like, really, you're angry at me?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. there's a lot of real things happening, you know,
well,
like actual things.
Like your pal Quesada says, you know, they comic fans treat creators like two-dimensional characters and the comic book people like real people. And I think that's the problem. So, oh, well.
He's right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, dude, seriously, keep it up. I mean, honestly, Denver, I think, looks fantastic. And, you know, I hope you make more of the Push Goals. Hell, I hope you get six figures.
Well, thank you so much, man. It's always fun talking to you, dude.
Likewise, dude. Thanks, yeah. Thanks for coming on. I truly appreciate it. To wrap things up, we're talking with filmmaker Brett Culp. Brett also is a successful Kickstarter campaign man for his film Legends of the Night. It's a documentary about people who are inspired by the stories and idea of Batman. Perfect timing for the 75th anniversary. And this is a two-year passion project for Brett that came true. And now the film is being exhibited at film festivals. But also we talked too about if you go to their website, wearebatman.com, you can arrange for a showing of Legends of the Night in your town. And it's great because they are tying themselves with a lot of charities, and it's an excellent win-win not only for Brett and for viewers, but the charities that are involved as well. So, interesting conversation with filmmaker Brett Culp now on Word Balloon. Brett Culp, welcome to Word Balloon. Very excited that you decided to join me today.
Oh, well, thanks for the invitation. I'm delighted to be here.
Congratulations on reaching your Kickstarter goal and getting the movie made. It looks fantastic. And I think the great thing is, the general theme is, much like another documentary, Waiting for Superman, you've proven that Batman has transcended whatever Warner Brothers or DC Comics dictate, and the idea of Batman is universal and very powerful.
Yeah, you know, we all, I mean, there's a level at which there are certainly these official stories that are told, and they've inspired us for 75 years now. My goodness, this character's been around for so long. But there's also this character of Batman that exists in our minds, you know, that is inspiring to us. You know, people have asked me, this movie, Legends of the Night, tells the story of people from around the U.S. who were inspired by their childhood love of Batman to do great things in the world and to do amazing things in their own lives and in their communities and the lives of others. And it's really a great exploration of the power of stories and how we can be inspired by them and how heroes can really exist in the world and that we have that superhero within us. And, you know, as I've gone through this process, people have asked me, you know, what's your favorite version of Batman? Like, which actor or, you know, which story? And to me, after working on this, my favorite Batman is the little kid who puts the cape around their neck and runs through the backyard and imagines the adventure that they could go out on. And, you know, so I think that's what this film is all about. It's about that Batman, the Batman that lives in us.
Absolutely, and I can't think of any Batman fan that, as a four-year-old kid, didn't watch or even younger and thought, well, I could be this guy. I mean, he doesn't have superpowers. He's not an alien. He is just an example of physical perfection and a very strong moral compass to do the right thing. And, you know, my God, if that isn't attractive to a young mind, I don't know what is.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that is the thing. I mean, you know, so many of these other superhero characters, they're given their powers because of circumstances outside of their control. And then the heart of the story for them as a hero is, what are they going to do with that? How are they going to, use that for their own selfish means, or are they going to use it to make the world a better place? That's not Batman's struggle. You know, Batman's struggle comes from that childhood incident, you know, where he witnesses possibly the worst thing that anybody could ever see in their whole life, which is the death of their parents. And he makes this choice from a very young age. I have been hurt, I am in pain, but I will use that to bless the world, make a positive difference, and not let this kind of thing happen to somebody else. And I think, you know, all the young people in our society, even though they may not go through anything that traumatic in their life, they have that choice from a very early age. Am I going to choose to be a hero, or am I going to choose to be selfish? Am I going to choose to do what's great for the world and make a positive difference, or am I just going to pursue my own interests? And I think a character like Batman can inspire young people from the very beginning of those choices to make the bigger choices, to make the heroic decisions. And I think that can make a positive difference in the trajectory of their lives and in the way the world goes.
You know, obviously a lot of people remember this summer the San Francisco kid, Bat Kid, and it certainly got a lot of publicity. But I remember seeing your Kickstarter trailer and that you found a very similar story as well. You know, and I'll let you tell that story. But and also I would ask as a follow up after you tell it, if, you know, I hope the Bat Kid publicity, you know, provides the movie an opportunity and gets people to kind of pick up and think, oh, you know, maybe we're going to see Bat Kid. Obviously, I think your movie was finished after that story, but you have an equally inspirational story that, you know, is part of your movie.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I felt when I watched the San Francisco Bat Kid event that went so viral and became such a huge media event, for me, it was a very validating experience.
Cool.
Because I had spent the past 2 years of my life working on a film that essentially says, you know, Batman has the power to inspire us. Batman has the power to, you know, create something positive in our life. And you know, watching this community of people coming together around this young person and his Batman story, and watching them celebrate and be excited about that, I loved that. And as you said, you know, our story, our movie includes a story of a little boy named Kai who lives in Texas. And even though the San Francisco Bat Kid was the one that went huge and viral because they invited the whole city of San Francisco to be part of it, wishes like that on a much smaller scale have been going on for a very long time. It's just that they don't invite the whole community to be there. And so, you know, they're not as well known and they don't get the same media coverage and it's just not as big of a community event. But young people are getting those kind of wishes. Boys and girls are getting those kind of wishes all the time, and which is a beautiful thing. And our movie includes a story of a little boy named Kai who went through leukemia treatment, and that was his wish. His wish was to be Batman, and so and to have a Batman adventure. And so the city of Arlington, Texas, did that for him. And the story that's told in our film is of that adventure that he got to have, but it digs even a little deeper into what it was in his spirit and in his mother's spirit that caused that. That they wanted that to be his wish, that there was something very symbolic and emotional for their family, for him to have it affirmed for him that, yes, he is Batman, he has the spirit of Batman in him, and he used that spirit to help him get through this very difficult treatment.
That's really cool, and yeah, I can't imagine how you find these stories. I mean, you know, I've heard similar things like that. Do you go to Make-A-Wish in some of these places? And I mean, yeah, where did you find some of these more personal achievement, you know, Batman stories?
You know, it's actually, I wish I had a more dramatic, mysterious answer, but the answer was really Google. I mean, when I first started this, I did these Google searches for inspired by Batman, and I would go through, you know, usually you just look at the first page of Google results, and I would go through pages and pages and pages. I mean, I made it like page 120 of the Google results, and, you know, people's blogs would turn up where they had written these blog posts about how Batman had inspired them, you know, their Facebook posts, Facebook comments, Twitter handles. You know, I kind of went through the process from a research perspective for about 3 months at the very beginning of this process. And then once we started telling the world what we were doing back in 2012, and, you know, our Twitter account started to build up with followers, and we started saying, hey, we're looking for these stories, they started coming from everywhere. I mean, literally, I mean, hundreds of stories have been sent to us over the past 2 years, and particularly after the trailer that we released by Kickstarter last February went so viral. You know, we just got so much feedback, and there were so many amazing stories that were wonderful that just didn't fit in the film. And the film has a wide variety of stories in it. I think each story in this film is unique and different. Each person's story is a unique angle on how Batman and storytelling and heroic stories in general can inspire and change us. And it was difficult to have some of these amazingly moving stories come in through email to our studio and have to look at them and go, you know what, this is so beautiful, but we can't use it because it's too similar to one we've already captured, or something like that. And so, you know, I hope that each story in the movie will represent many of the other Batman fans and heroes that are doing great things in our world every day.
And it isn't just, you know, stories like Bat-Kid or the kid in Arlington as well. I mean, you've got some sort of college course or something called Batman. Can you explain that?
Yeah, you know, the film, we wanted to show how Batman is really working in our culture, and the story of a hero like Batman can work in our culture as a vehicle for helping people do things that wouldn't normally exist. So, you know, yeah, the film does include, you know, this story that's of Kai that's similar to the Bat-Kid story. But then it also includes stories like you just mentioned of Travis Langley, whose love of Batman and as a child and his love of psychology, and he became a psychology teacher. He had this creative idea to create a college course on psychology called Batman. And what it allows is for young people who, you know, I mean, it's one thing to sit down and say, now today we're going to talk about Freud. Now today we're going to talk about Jung. And, you know, how interesting is that? But what he's doing is he's using Batman stories and characters and scenarios to explain these concepts. Because when you look at all these diverse lineup of Batman villains, in many cases they fit into these, you know, many of these abnormalities.
You bet.
And let's talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs from the perspective of the Batman villains and where they fit into that, and, you know, stuff like that. And so it was really awesome to do that. And there are other stories. I mean, there's a story about a guy who's using Batman with comics with young people in therapy. You know, it's hard when young people are having emotional challenges. They don't want to open up. How do you get them to open up? He's using these stories from Batman comics based on the challenges they're having to get them to talk about those characters, which they're very comfortable doing, to then get to the heart of what's going on in their life and what they're dealing with. It kind of gives them this very comfortable avenue to do that. So, I mean, there's stories like that. There's stories of other people, not just young people, but people who are, you know, adults who have struggled with physical challenges, mm-hmm. who every day are using that Batman symbol, that kind of courage that Batman has to get through their challenges. And all the way to Michael Uslan, who's in the film, who's been the executive producer of every Batman film since 1989. And it was his love of Batman as a child that inspired him to go through 10 years of no's and doors being slammed in his face during the 1980s when he was trying to sell the concept of a dark and serious Batman. And everybody thought it was a terrible idea, and everybody rejected him. And now, look what it's become. I mean, you know, and that was a very Batman spirit that he portrayed to even bring Batman to the silver screen to begin with.
Yeah, no question. And I think Mike Uslan in the films and another guy in your movie as well, Denny O'Neill, along with the artist Neil Adams. I think in the comics, obviously, Denny and Neil are responsible for the modern Batman. It started with them in 1969. But even today, really, the through line is there, and it is their Batman that is represented today. And as you say, yeah, Michael having to, you know, kind of combat that bam, wham, pow, you know, approach that the Adam West show had. And by the way, I'm sure you feel the same way. There's room for the Adam West approach, and I know you said it as well.
Oh, yeah.
You love all iterations of Batman, but it was tough getting Hollywood to kind of come over, and that might be incredible to hear from younger listeners, but it really was this major obstacle. And as you say now, my God, you know, The Dark Knight gets nominated for Best Picture, and I mean, you know, is second only to The Avengers as far as, you know, superhero films, but is right there in the top 10 of most, you know, successful films of all time. It can't just be comic book and Batman fans. Batman truly is universal, and it took guys like Denny and Michael to kind of help make that happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's one of the things that's very interesting. You know, obviously the geek culture and the Comic-Con fans and, you know, the people that read the comics every Wednesday, you know, they love this film and they're so excited about it. I didn't realize when we started how validating for many of them this documentary would be. You know, I've got people now that are taking their parents and their friends to this movie in the theater and saying, "This is why I love Batman. You've been making fun of me for years. This is the reason, because it's awesome."
You
know, and I didn't realize when I first started that was going to happen, that that's the way they were going to respond to it. I totally understand why now that, you know, I've kind of, you know, shown it to them and shown them pieces of it. I totally get it. But it's the power of what you're saying is that, you know, Batman is now just right at the heart of pop culture. I mean, you don't have to be, I mean, it's amazing now when I walk around, I mean, literally, every time I go out in public, I see someone wearing a Batman shirt. And they might never have read a Batman comic book, but they know who Batman is, and they love Batman enough to wear the symbol on their chest because of what it means to them. Even if they never know who Michael Uslan or Denny O'Neill or Neil Adams or Frank Miller or any of those guys are, they know that. And that's what's amazing about this character, to watch what these innovative storytellers, you know, particularly like in the 70s and 80s, created with this character that is now just permeated so deep into our consciousness. And I think what you're saying is interesting about the Adam West version. I do think that, you know, when I was at Comic-Con this year in San Diego, I was seeing how much the 1960s Batman is like becoming cool again.
Yep.
You know, I'm seeing people with the shirts and the statues and the artwork. And, you know, there was a day where the free giveaway bags at Comic-Con were 66 Batman.
Yep.
And, you know, now it's coming out to DVD in the summer. And now you've got Lego Batman, you know, that is that lighter. It's not the same as Adam West Batman, certainly, but it is that more not take itself so seriously kind of Batman. And so I think now we're coming to a time where literally, whereas all the fans were afraid of Adam West for so long because they thought people were making fun of their character, and they were to some extent, now there really is becoming room for us to love the Batman that's for 3-year-olds and the Batman that's for 30-year-olds, all in the same breath. Love it all. Enjoy it all. It's all Batman.
I completely agree. Well, and, you know, I think it's kind of like a 12-step program or the six stages of dealing with death, because when you're a 3-year-old and you watch Adam West, it's high drama and high action. And then you hit about 10 or 12, and it's corny. and you want to stay away from it. Then you get around high school or college age and you watch it again, and then you get the joke. And then it's genius. Yeah. And you realize, like, really how great Adam West was acting on several levels, you know, delivering the action and the fun and the excitement, but also, you know, tongue firmly in cheek. And really, it is this brilliant comedy. And I agree. I'm glad that a lot of people are waking up to that, and he's getting his due in time. So that's great for that show. I also want to mention Jill Pantazzi also, because she's a comic book blogger and a podcaster as well. And you know, it's nice to see too that, you know, Batman can inspire women, and I think her story is very unique for listeners who don't know. Although I know that Word Balloon listeners are kind of hip to the, you know, comic book blog and podcast culture. But for those who don't, you can tell a little bit about Jill's story.
Absolutely. You know, Jill Pantozzi is really, I mean, I it was just my joy to get to know her. She works for the Mary Sue, and also does, as you said, all kinds of blogging, and is so fun to watch on Twitter. I mean, she's not only a sweet person, but a butt kicker when butts need to be kicked, which is awesome. I've told her several times, I want to be you when I grow up.
There you go.
And you know, she was born with muscular dystrophy, and you know, it started to show in her life when she was, you know, early childhood, and you know, she's had a lot to overcome. It would be very easy for her to just say, you know what, I'm not going to engage, or even as a blogger, just to say, I'm just going to sit at home, or, you know, whatever, and just be a writer. But she didn't do that. I mean, she works in New York City, drives in every day to do her job as a journalist, and parks in New York City 5 days a week, and travels in there, and, you know, I mean, I got to journey with her one day as she did all that, and I mean, it's an impressive thing. I mean, I live in Florida. I travel in New York City, and every time I have to get around, I whine the whole time about how frustrating it is and how difficult it is, and, you know, the weather comes through, and it's nightmarish, and I'm whining about it, and then I, you know, about the time I whine about it, I think about Jill, and I'm like, you know what, Jill's doing this today, too, and, you know, I don't have near the challenges she has, and so, I mean, she's absolutely an inspiration to me. I was so happy when we did the New York City premiere that she got to be there with us and be part of that. It was so much fun, and she's just an amazing person.
That's cool. And yes, the film has been in New York. It's been in the Chicago area as well. It's on tour. Let's let people know how they can see this film.
Yeah. So if you go, there's two ways you can see this film. The way that's most fun and that we're enjoying right now is that you can see it in the theater. If you go to our website, which is wearebatman.com, there's a page for screenings at the top. You can hit showtimes. There's a little link right from the homepage there that can take you to the list. Right now, there's over 40 theatrical screenings listed there. In cities all over the U.S. And what's unique about these screenings is I just finished a theatrical tour in the month of February where I was personally in 10 cities. We went in the East Coast, and then we did 5 screenings in California, which were just wonderful, and the spirit was amazing. But what's awesome is if you go to that list, every single one of those screenings that you see there was requested by someone who wanted to bring this movie to their theater. And here's what's cool that we're doing. We're partnering with a company called Tug.com. And what happens is if you go to our website, wearebatman.com, if you don't see your city, you can request a screening of the film. And Tug, at no cost to you, will arrange a screening in your local theater for you to see it. You then have to get the word out to your friends, because what happens is there has to be a pre-sell of about usually somewhere between 55 and 75 tickets.
Sure.
As long as you get that sold within about 7 days of the event, and there's enough pre-sell tickets sold, the event happens. It's confirmed. It's a go. And the revenues that would have come to my company from that screening will instead go to the charity of your choice.
Outstanding.
So, yeah, it's a wonderful thing. It's exactly what when we made this movie, we wanted our distribution approach to be right in the spirit of Batman. Just like the movie reflects the spirit of Batman, we wanted our distribution approach to be in that vein, too. So that's what's going on right now. There are people all over the U.S. who've requested screenings, who are inviting their friends, who are working hard to get that minimum number of tickets sold, whether it's to connect with their comic shop or an organization they're part of or a group of friends they have, and get everybody to buy $10 tickets and let's go have an inspirational night and help a charity out in the process. And so we're so proud of the way that's gone and the success we've had, and we're seeing more requests pour in, so it's really fun for us.
That's terrific, and I've seen that done with Cult Films in Chicago. That's where I am. And I think that's a wonderful way, because certainly those kinds of art house movie theaters, because of streaming media and DVDs and stuff, have you know, fallen by the wayside. But if you can show a theater that, yes, you can get so many butts in the seats and stuff and really make it worth the while, you know, then events like this can happen. And I think that's a great way of bringing community and film back together again, and certainly for a good cause like what your movie represents. So that's wonderful. So wearebatman.com, correct?
Yep, we love it. And then additional to that, you know, you can also pre-order the film on DVD and Blu-ray. We've got some T-shirts there and stuff like that. And all of those revenues go to the not-for-profit that my wife and I are starting to support this film called The Rising Heroes Project. And that just, all those revenues, it's not about lining our pocket. It's just about giving us the revenues we need to keep getting this film out in the world. We have dreams of getting it into schools and to educators all over the world, and also connecting it with more charity organizations so that they can use it for fundraisers. But we need resources to be able to do that. And every time you pre-order or buy a DVD or Blu-ray, you're helping us get this movie out into the world.
That's fantastic. What do you, once you, you know, the time of Legends of the Night is over and stuff, as a filmmaker, what do you want to do next?
Man, you know, my head is so spinning right now with this. You know, I have many ideas in my head for what I want to do next. I'm not sure which one of them I'm going to grab. I'm going to kind of wait and see how this project goes. But the reality for me is, you know, some filmmakers are like, look, I'm done. I want to get this film to a distributor so I can move on to the next film. For me, this entire year is going to be spent getting this movie out to the world and letting this movie be a vehicle for what we intended it for, which is inspiring people and encouraging them and helping support these not-for-profits and charities all over the world. And I'm going to spend the rest of this year doing that. And I'm excited to see what I learn along the way and who I meet and what opportunity is the right one next.
You know, if there was a Wayne Foundation, I'm sure they'd get behind your efforts, because this is exactly
the... for them. Let me know if you find them.
Yeah, exactly, man. This is the kind of thing that Bruce Wayne and his civilian guys would, I think, absolutely get behind. And the good news is it is an excellent movie. It tells very inspiring stories. And it really is, as you say, I mean, there really are a wide range of stories on how Batman has inspired people. It's called Legends of the Night. Go to wearebatman.com and look up the information if there's a screening in your city, or, as Brett said, follow directions on how to arrange for a screening in your town. Brett Culp, congratulations on the Kickstarter, on the film itself, and what has already been a productive 2014, and I hope the rest of the year goes equally well.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me to be here. It was a delight to chat with you.
Brett Culp. Once again, go to wearebatman.com, find out the information on how you can help support the project, but more importantly, how you can get it screening in your town. I think this is great. And like I said in the conversation, not only for films like Brett's, but also cult films and stuff, it's a really great way to get movie theaters the crowd they need to, you know, really make a buck, because, you know, that's business. But also that the communities can now really get fun films and make these great events that, you know, it could be a nice little happening for your town. And certainly Legends of the Night would be a great way to start. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. John Suntress reminding you, today's episode was brought to you from our dear friends at InStockTrades.com, a Word Balloon sponsor pretty much since day one. We thank our friends Cameron and Christina Merkler of InStock Trades for their support of Word Balloon over the years. And in turn, you can help them out by going over there and getting some amazing books at great prices. They do a great job. Don't forget your orders are $50 or more. Don't forget your orders of $50 or more receive free shipping. They make it easy with the kind of product that they're offering. Our pals Steve Niles and Dave Wachter did Breath of Bones, A Tale of the Golem, 42% off, great Dark Horse book, just $8.69. Old-time fan of Warren's Creepy, Dark Horse has that for you, 42% off, trade paperback volume 3, $11.59. From Titan Books, here's some interesting foreign comics for you. Snowpiercer, hardcover volume 2, The Explorer, 25% off, just $18.24. You can get Uncanny, the great crime book from Aaron Campbell and Andy Diggle, two excellent creators that are delivering on a very interesting book. Volume 1 is 30% off. It was $19.99. It's just $13.99 at InStockTrades.com. Don't take my word for it. Go to the website. Check out the deals for yourself. InStockTrades.com. John Sutcher saying thanks again for listening to Word Balloon. Thank you, League of Word Balloon listeners, for your support. I threw it out there. The 9th anniversary of Word Balloon is coming up in May. And I asked, you know, would people be interested in me being interviewed? I don't know. Apparently they are. So that's cool. I got a nice response on that. So we'll do it. So we'll find somebody fun to ask me a bunch of questions. And this is your chance to start asking questions as well. So if you want, you can write me a question either on Twitter or on Facebook. My Twitter handle is John Word Balloon. You can do it at Facebook under my name, John Suntress, or at the Word Balloon Facebook page as well. Or you can email me, john@wordballoon.com. Give me a question. It might be chosen. I will do my best to answer all of them. And, you know, we'll set that up for May for the 9th anniversary of Word Balloon. So thanks. I'm glad that people are interested and want to hear about it. I've always got stories. You know, I'm never at a loss of words, as our 3- and 4-hour episodes will attest. Until next time, thanks again for listening. Look forward to talking to you again next week. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2014.